Yes, indeed.
Our next public hearing is subdivision 2010-3, Diamond State Community Land Trust.
This is an application to consider the subdivision of land in an AR1 agriculture residential district in Little Creek 100, Sussex County, dividing 42.17 acres into 50 lots using the cluster development concept located north of Route 72, also known as Wooten Road, across from Route 458, also known as Hudson Road, and being west of Trap Pond. Gentlemen, I would ask Mr. Abbott if he has any additional comments.
Mr. Chairman, on May 28th, the applicant submitted a 3-inch exhibit booklet. Each of you has a copy of that. It's a part of the record. That exhibit booklet also includes the Technical Advisory Committee review of March 27th to 2009. The state's final plus response is in the exhibit booklet. On October 21st, 2009, we received the LDOT letter of no objection for the entrance location. And tonight, Mr. Ross handed us a letter in opposition to this application from Doug Sutherland, and it addresses concerns that the requirements of 99-9C have not been accurately addressed. Makes reference to involving clear cutting of the forest lands, loss of forest land and farm acreage, and that area is predominantly residential and agriculture. So I'll have unless you have any questions.
All right, sir, we thank you. And the chair recognizes Mr. Fuqua. Mr. Fuqua, before you begin, since this is our last public hearing, I assume that's why you're all here. And we have exhibits up here. They are hard to see from where you are. Feel free to get up, take a look. We just ask that you do it quietly. Do feel free to get up and take a look. Also, for those of you sitting way in the back, there are some seats near the front now. If you want to move up, it's a little better vantage point, and you might be able to hear a little bit better. And that being said, Mr. Fuqua, appreciate your indulgence. You may go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen. For the record, my name is James Fuqua. I'm an attorney here in Georgetown, and I represent the applicant, Diamond State Community Land Trust. With me is Van Temple, seated right back here, who's the executive director. Also behind me is Gary Couples and Bruce Horn from ECI, which is the engineering firm and site designers. There was an exhibit book that was submitted, which Mr. Abbott mentioned. I do have an amended site data page for that booklet, which I'll submit to Mr. Lang. Gentlemen, I know this has been a pretty busy and long night so far, and obviously there's still a lot of people here interested in this application. So we're going to have to prolong it some, but I will try to be as concise as we can and cover the material necessary.
We understand, Mr. Fuqua, you have a duty to create a record, so create away.
Okay, this is an application for a 50-lot subdivision utilizing the cluster provisions of the zoning ordinance. The original application for this parcel was filed in December of 2008, and that original application was actually for a GRRPC. So the original application was actually a change of zone application. That application was modified by withdrawing it and refiling as a subdivision application, which again is what's before you tonight. The reason for the original application, the GRRPC, the original proposal considered utilizing manufactured homes within the subdivision, which was subsequently determined not to be the way the application was going to go forward. The subdivision application, of course, would result in a conventional type housing built on the lots. The site itself contains approximately 42 acres. It's located on the north side of Wooten Road, which is County Road 72. It's approximately across from the Hudson Road intersection, which is County Road 458. The site is southeast of Laurel, It's just west and actually borders lands of Trapon State Park. And the general nature of the area is the state lands, agricultural lands, and single-family residential uses. In the general area around this intersection, there are approximately 17 residential lots, some of which have homes located on them. In preparation for this application, a number of studies were performed by the applicant. That included an archaeological study by Dr. Ed Otter. A wetland investigation report was prepared by ECI. A jurisdictional determination was issued by the Corps of Engineers in April 2010. And there was a copy of that letter in the record. There was a soils report for on-site wastewater treatment, which was done by Atlantic Resource Management, and a natural heritage and endangered species assessment inquiry. And those documents are all in tabs 12, 13, 14, and 15 of the exhibit book. The site itself consists of existing woodlands. There are two areas of non-tidal wetlands that are located near the rear of the property. They're small areas. One is about 0.87 acres, and the other one is 0.06 acres. There's a ditch that runs along the eastern boundary of the site, which is designated as a blue line stream. The site design, as we'll be reviewing with you, will affect 23 acres of the wooded area and will preserve 14.6, or approximately 38% of the wooded area. Additional trees will be preserved on lots where as little clearing as necessary will be encouraged. The wetland areas will remain undisturbed, and they will be substantially buffered from the areas being developed. There will be a 50-foot buffer provided along the ditch on the eastern boundary of the property. The rest of the perimeter of the entire development will have a 30-foot forested buffer, and that would be the minimum buffer provided. In most places, that buffer is significantly greater than 30 feet. The design of the subdivision creates 50 single-family lots. Each of the lots is adjacent to a portion of the community open space. The open space includes the preserved forest areas, the wetland areas, the buffers, the stormwater management areas, and a recreational area. The recreational area includes a community rec center with a pavilion, a barbecue area, gazebo, tot lot, horseshoe pits, two multi-purpose combination basketball tennis courts, and a one-acre community garden area. There is also a separate tot lot and gazebo area located at another location within the development away from the rec center. The total community open area, open space, is approximately 22.17 acres, or 52% of the site. And that does not include the area to be used for a wastewater disposal, which is an additional 5.5 acres, which, of course, will be open space. And if that was considered also, then the open space would be 65%. But the open space without the wastewater area is 52%. The open area also includes a small cemetery. The site was researched and delineated as part of the archaeological study that was done. Five graves were identified, dating back to, I believe it was the 1850s. The names of the deceased buried there are West and King, and Mrs. West still owns the property, and they're her relatives there. That site will be, of course, undisturbed. It will be fenced, and it will be maintained as part of the common areas. Access will be provided to people wishing to visit it, and the site is located in the front right corner of the property. There'll be one entrance to the development from Wooten Road. DelDOT has issued a letter of no objection as to the entrance, which basically lines up with the Hudson Road intersection. The developer will be required to construct entrance improvements as required by DelDOT. The streets will be privately maintained by the development. The DelDOT letter is in tab 8 of the exhibit book. Water supply for domestic use and fire protection will be provided by a public water supply company, Tidewater Utilities. And the wastewater will be collected by a gravity sewer system and conveyed to an advanced treatment facility. Effluent will be infiltrated on the site. And that system, again, will be a central sewer system that will also be operated by a public utility, Tidewater Environmental Systems. And the Tidewater ability to serve letters are located in tab 6 of the exhibit book. Electric will be provided by Delaware Electric Co-op, a telephone by Verizon. The site is in the Laurel School District and is in the coverage area of the Laurel Fire Department. All owners within the development will be members of a homeowners association. That association will be responsible for collecting dues, enforcing the restrictions, and maintaining the common areas. The average lot size of the 50 lots being proposed is 9,500 square feet. The minimum lot size is 7,500 square feet, which, of course, is the minimum permitted under the cluster provisions. The proposed 50 lots on 42.17 acres is a gross density of 1.18 lots per acre. So 1.18 lots per acre is the effective density. Now, in reference to the proposed land use and the legal requirements for land use, there are comments from the Office of the State Planning Department raising objections because the site is located in a level 4 area, as that area is designated on the state strategies for policies and spending. And I realize there's a lot of people here tonight who probably aren't as familiar with that as you are. And as you know, we've discussed this in many different hearings and in different contexts. But that is a state spending policy. It's where a state is going to invest in infrastructure. It is not intended to be a land use map, and that state strategy says exactly that. It is a state spending policy. The state strategy's policy does not override private property rights. It's a document the state has, but it does not affect the ultimate use of one's property. What does affect the use of one's property, of course, are the applicable zoning land use laws. And as you know, sitting as the Planning and Zoning Commission, the land use laws in Sussex County that affect how a person can deal with their property, develop their property, or use their property is controlled by the Sussex County Zoning Ordinance and the Sussex County Comprehensive Plan. Under the zoning ordinance, our land is zoned AR1, Agricultural Residential. Section 115-19 of the zoning ordinance states that the purpose of the AR1 district is twofold. Number one, it's to provide for a full range of agricultural activities. And second, it's to provide for low-density, single-family residential development. And Section 115-20 establishes that detached single-family dwellings on individual lots are a permitted use in the AR1 district. So the use that we're proposing is a permitted use. And I say that in contrast to some of the prior applications tonight, which were for conditional uses or changes of zone. That's where applicants were asking to do something that is not permitted. It's only permitted if the county changes the zone or if the county issues a conditional use. In this case, what we're requesting to do is a permitted use subject to us complying with the requirements of the subdivision ordinance. Along the same lines, as the commission knows, the Sussex County Comprehensive Plan update was adopted in 2008. So this isn't a stale document. This isn't a document that needs revision because it was just revised, and the Planning Commission was involved in that process. And in that comprehensive plan, our lands are designated as being in what's called the low-density AR1 area. And that comprehensive plan provides, on page 3-18, that in the AR1 zoning, it permits an average of 2 homes per acre where a cluster-style plan is used. And 30% of the tract is preserved in permanent open space. It also states, the comprehensive plan also states, under the guidelines section, that the primary uses envisioned in the low-density area are agriculture activities and single-family detached homes, same as the zoning ordinance. It goes on to state that the cluster option permitted in the low-density areas should continue to permit overall site densities of up to 2 units per acre, provided that significant open space is set aside and central sewer is utilized. So under the comprehensive plan, these uses are established as basically being not just permitted, but this is what these areas are designed for. And perhaps for the benefit of everyone here who may not be familiar with the expression cluster development, you know, these are not townhouses. This is not single-family condominiums. The cluster refers to the fact that the larger lots that would have to be in a normal subdivision are allowed to be clustered or made smaller in order to create greater open space within the subdivision. And that's what a cluster subdivision means. Now, I mentioned 2 units of the acre. Again, under the laws, the land use laws of Sussex County, by ordinance, the maximum density in the low density area as far as a subdivision was reduced to 1.5 lots per acre. So it's a smaller density. And again, our proposal of 1.18 lots per acre with a preserved open space of 52% significantly exceeds the 30% open space requirement of the ordinance and is considerably less than the 1.5 density permitted by the ordinance. So as far as the legal requirements, we are basically not just in compliance, but we are in greater compliance and even required. Now, with that, what I'd like to do is turn our presentation over first to Gary Couples, who's going to review the site plan. I'm then going to have a few more comments, and I'm going to have the executive director speak regarding the applicant itself, and hopefully be able to get through the presentation rather quickly. And with that, Gary, if you would.
Good evening. For the record, my name is Gary Couples. I'm a registered professional land surveyor and a professional planner, and I'm also the president of ECI, the firm that provided the planning and engineering for this project today. Jim's did, as usual, a great job of doing my job for me as far as describing the project. But I think what I'd like to do this evening is perhaps go over how the design evolved, because that's oftentimes a question when a project of this nature is provided. Initially, when the project was presented to us, we went to the soils maps, we went to existing avenues of research that we could find related to this property. Utilizing that information, we then developed an initial plan that, quite frankly, looked nothing at all like this. It had much more density, and it appeared, based upon the published soils information, that we would need up to 17 acres for the disposal of sanitary sewage on site. As the project moved forward, and various studies were developed. One, the soils that Atlantic provided, and there's a copy of the report in the book, and the information that JCM Environmental Services provided in terms of wetlands, we were able to narrow the project down. And one of the key issues that came up very early in the game was the discovery of the cemetery that exists on site. We did a very comprehensive archaeological investigation of that cemetery to determine the limits of it. Initially, if you read the report that Dr. Otter put in his book and we've included in the data book, you'll find that he did do test pits around the vicinity of this cemetery to determine the number of grave sites there and to buffer that. That is exactly what is shown on the preliminary plan that we've provided to you today. We've also provided the buffer area around it, as well as a perpetual easement into the cemetery and perpetual care into the future. When the wetlands were delineated, there were basically three. Mr. Fuqua indicated that there were two, but to be very clear, larger wetland up in this corner here, the site which would be the northeast corner. There's another small wetland in the northwest corner, and there is wetlands along what we call the Blue Line Stream. Those wetlands are confined to bend banks of that stream. So there are three distinct wetland areas. There are no state wetlands. If you review the plus comments, there was some discussion and there was an exhibit, I believe, that was included in their initial comments. When we had that researched, we found that there were no state wetlands. So there are 404, which are federal wetlands, which are governed by the United States Army Corps of Engineers, but there are no state of Delaware wetlands on the parcel. So I wanted to make it very, very clear of that. Once we were able to determine the limits of the site in terms of the buffer areas that are required, we were then able to develop the plan. And although we could have had additional density up to, I believe, 71 lots, when we looked at the parcel as far as what it could support and what the project could support in terms of the economical viability of the project and direction from the executive director of the New Horizons community, we settled upon the 50 lots, which is, again, per the discussion that Mr. Fuqua just had with you, is a density of 1.18 units to the acre or lots to the acre. In terms of buffer, we have buffered the west side of the project by a 30-foot buffer. On the east side of the project, the side that it abuts the Trap Pond State Park, we have buffered that 50 feet. But that's sort of a misnomer because there are only three lots on the state park side, lots number 39, 40, and 41, that are within that buffer. And if you would look at where, in all probability, the housing would be located, it would be located towards the street. And the distance from the back of a potential home to that property line would probably be in the vicinity of 110 feet, just using a conventional 28-foot wide home. Conversely, on the other side with lots numbers 10, 9, and 8, the same situation exists, although we have a 30-foot buffer. When you place the house, you'll find that you probably, from the back of the house to the lot line, have something in the vicinity of 80 feet. And in other areas, it ranges, for example, up in the northern area, up in the vicinity of lot 29, it could be 120 feet or up to 160 feet. Of distance between the property line and the back of the home. So I thought that was important. The minimum lot size at the county, per county requirements, is 7,500 square feet. The minimum lot size that we've provided is 7,900 square feet, and the average out, the average lot, is 9,480 square feet. Another issue that would we had to address straight on was that of traffic. And on the preliminary plan, there is what we would forecast in terms of what the traffic would be like. Like at the intersection of Hudson and Wooten Drive and the new boulevard going into our project. Although there was no requirement for the developer to do a traffic study through an agreement with DelDOT, I did contact Eric Ostenchuk of Traffic Planning and Design, who has been before you before on other projects that we've been involved with, and we calculated the level of service at that intersection. The intersection right here could be right now, it's, that functions at a level of service A. After the development of this project in total, it will still be level of service A. Although there is an increase, and I'm sure people would say, well, there is a drastic increase in traffic, which in reality it would appear to be. The reality of it is when you look at the percent increase over the number of lots and come up with level of service, the level of service stays the same. It's very consistent. And again, I would tell you that there is a letter in the book from DelDOT that is a letter of no objection. They have reviewed this project very thoroughly and have issued that letter. Jim has covered the issues related to the community improvements and the issues related to sewer and water. What he has not spoke to right now is how this project addresses Section 99.9C. I'm not going to put you guys to sleep. It's been a long evening. It's in the book. The responses to 99.9C are there for your perusal. The responses and comments from PLUS are in the book. The PLUS comments along with our responses. And I think it's very important to note that the Delaware State Housing Authority broke tradition, although this project is in level four and have come out in support of this project. The stormwater and soil erosion sedimentation controls for this project are tentatively shown on the preliminary plan as well as this exhibit. We have had preliminary discussions with the Sussex County Conservation District, and they have reviewed our preliminary calculations, and this is pretty much what the stormwater will look like. The streets for the project are developed to be 24 foot wide. That would be the macadam area. And then we're doing a mountable curb that's 2 foot wide. So the true cartway is 26 feet and sidewalks on both sides of the road. There was something else that was interesting that came up in the PLUS comment, and that was related to pedestrian circulation. The Delaware Department of State Parks offered to allow our project to connect via pedestrian walkway to the Trap Pond State Park. That offer is contained on page 14 of the PLUS letter, paragraph 4. We are going to accept their offer and develop a pedestrian trail that will connect to the park at an area to be determined by the Division of Parks and Rec. We've not got to that. We were sort of surprised that they allowed that, but we will definitely be doing that. I think the when you look at transition from what you have as a park on the west side or the east side of the project, this project transitions, I think, fairly well in that we're at least 110 feet from a dwelling to the park, and the simple fact that we've been invited to have pedestrian circulation in the park says that they view us as potentially a good neighbor and someone that's going to utilize this park, and we would like to obviously avail ourselves of that. As Mr. Fuqua had indicated, all of the lots developed in the project will have direct access to the open space. Now, I don't want to mislead you. There is a lot, number 18, that does not right now. That lot will have direct access to open space at the final plan stage. I think when one looks and compares this project to the standards that you folks have developed for cluster development, we've met that test. We've provided more than the 30% open space. In terms of clearing, there in our plus comments, you'll find a response that Mr. Horn from our office put together that indicates that the amount of clearing on this project is not dissimilar from the amount of clearing that currently has existed at the Trapp Harn State Park. And I think that's interesting. We looked at the areas that are adjacent to buffers. Only 6 of the lots are immediately adjacent to buffers, which is 12% of the project. You look at the roadway network. The roadway network in much of Sussex County was developed as farm-to-market roads. And the impact of development on those roads is a consideration in an agricultural community. The fact that the level of service at that intersection will remain the same as it currently is indicates to me that there would not be an issue related to the difference between residential traffic and agricultural traffic. The roadway network that has been developed for this project is curvilinear. It sort of minimizes streetscape in that it's not an open barrack style. The roads are curvilinear. You're not going to see a lot of houses at one time. The intent is to make these wooded lots. And I would ask you to look at some of the renderings that are included within our book that very specifically and graphically show the way our client intends this project to look. And that representation, I think, is it's color, and it's done very, very well. Again, in terms of the forest, Mr. Fuqua has discussed that with you. Another thing is the environmental aspect of this project, the cluster versus conventional. The cluster development of this parcel allows for the treatment of wastewater. And initially, there was a proposal by Tidewater to tie this into a regional wastewater plant that they were developing as part of another development nearby. That has not occurred to date. So our backup plan is exactly what we've shown. We've provided disposal and treatment on site. Should that plant off-site become available as a regional facility, then Tidewater, who will be the manager and owner of the facility here as the regulated public utility, there can be discussion then to continue with the initial plan. But that plan is far into the future simply because of the economic conditions that we're undergoing in the housing industry. That sort of ends my presentation. If there's questions on how the plan was developed, I'm here to answer.
All right, sir. Well, we'll let Mr. Fuqua conclude his presentation, and then we'll fall back to questions here when we heard what he had to say.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, again, I just want to note for the record that the in tab 7 of the exhibit book, there was a summary of the considerations set forth in Section 99.9C of the subdivision ordinance. The final part of our presentation is probably the most important, and that's really a question of who is Diamond State Community Land Trust and what is the purpose of this application, because I know a lot of people are concerned about that. And I'd like to start by referring to the comments from Rich Kotz that were in the original PLUS letter. As you know, Rich used to be the planner. He's no longer works with the county. But because of the long time delays on these applications, these comments were received some time ago. But his comment in the PLUS response was something to the effect that our application appeared to be for the sole benefit of one property owner, in effect extending that property owner special treatment. Now, when I read that, I thought, this is crazy. This isn't a land use comment. This is some kind of a personal comment. And in all fairness, that comment was in response to the original GRRPC application, not this subdivision application. So he may have thought that was being asked a bit too far. As I said, I didn't view that as a land use comment, but that being said, and not only was the comment really irrelevant and misplaced, but in this application, that comment is absolutely incorrect. It's absolutely wrong. Probably every other applicant I've represented before the county, basically as part of the goal of their application, is to make money. You know, that's why they're here to do, and there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, they better make money or that project's going to fail. And quite frankly, we all get up in the morning and go to our jobs or go to our businesses to make money. We do it so we can pay our bills and take care of our family and pursue happiness as we define it. However, that's not the motivation of Diamond State Community Land Trust. This is a nonprofit organization. Its goal is to help create safe, decent, and attractive, affordable housing in Sussex County, Delaware. Now, how does the county view the goal of my client? How does Sussex County Council view the goal that I just stated? And again, I refer to the 2008 comprehensive plan update because these questions are addressed in the comprehensive plan. Section 7 of the plan is what's referred to as the housing element. Basically, there's some pretty clear insights stated in this section of the comprehensive plan. And again, this isn't the position, well, it is the position, but this isn't the statement of my client or me. This is the county council statement. Under housing affordability, the plan states that the county's housing market had been driven up in home prices and to new highs, and Sussex County's low to moderate income working households are hit hardest by these cost increases because their incomes typically do not keep pace with the cost of living and especially the cost of housing. The plan goes on to state that the Delaware Department of Labor classified 52% of the jobs in Sussex County as low paying. And that's as compared to 29% in Kent County and 18% in Newcastle County. The Delaware statewide needs assessment in 2007 indicated that the elderly population of Sussex County would rise 52% between 2005 and 2015. And the Delaware Population Consortium predicts that the Sussex County population will increase 15% from 2007 to 2015. Now, again, the comprehensive plan goes on to state that in cooperation with state and federal agencies, housing industry representatives, and nonprofit housing advocacy groups, Sussex County Council has been very active in trying to address low to moderate income housing needs. And one of the things they do, which I know you gentlemen are familiar with, is the moderately priced housing unit program. Back in 2006, the county council adopted what they called the MPHU program to encourage some of this low and moderately income housing. The MPHU program offers expedited review and density bonuses to developers who build homes affordable to people within the 80 and 125% area's medium income as established. And the comprehensive plan goes on to state, and this is very interesting, it goes on to state that in November of 2006, the Sussex County Council approved a $50,000 community investment grant to Diamond State Community Land Trust, my client. This nonprofit corporation partners with the state, local governments, housing advocates, and others to expand home ownership opportunities for Delaware's low to moderate income households. Among other activities, the land trust undertakes several types of projects on behalf of existing and prospective low to moderate income home buyers. And it goes on to state that Diamond State, as well as, ironically, the West Rehoboth Land Trust, who I believe some of those folks were before you tonight earlier, but the land trust advocate community land trust homes as an effective way to expand the permanent supply of affordable housing. Under their model, low to moderate income buyers own their home but lease the underlying land for a nominal fee from the community land trust. At resale, the homeowners keep only a certain portion of the appreciation. The remainder stays with the home in order to make that home affordable to the next buyer. So it projects itself to keep affordable housing available. And the again, the plan states as the number one goal and the number one objective of the housing element, the goal is to facilitate decent, safe, and sanitary housing for low and moderate income people throughout Sussex County. And the number one objective is to provide affordable housing option to the county's workforce earning this income. In summary, the Sussex County Council stated in the comp plan and recognizes in the comp plan the need for low and moderate income housing options to serve the needs of residents. The county's encouraged nonprofit housing organizations, including Diamond State Community Land Trust, to find ways to increase home ownership opportunities for the county residents in order to achieve the plan's goal of decent, safe, and sanitary housing. And with that, I will turn our presentation over to Van Temple. As I said, Mr. Temple is the executive director of Diamond State Community Land Trust.
Thank you, Van Temple, Diamond State Community Land Trust Executive Director. Appreciate the opportunity to present this application to you or be a part of that presentation tonight. The Diamond State Community Land Trust is a statewide nonprofit organization. Sussex County, Kent County, Newcastle is our service area. All three counties, the State Housing Authority, the Delaware Housing Coalition, City of Dover, a number of municipalities and jurisdictions and nonprofit other housing groups help create this. So it's created to be a permanent statewide nonprofit that works in partnership with the other balanced housing players in the state. Our mission is to create permanently affordable housing. So under the community land trust model, the owner owns the home, the land trust owns the land, and each owner has a 99-year ground lease for $40 a month for the exclusive use of that land under the house. I forgot to mention our headquarters is in Dover. We're active all over the state. This is our largest project. This is the project we started on several years ago with the land search and so forth. Most of our activity to date in terms of homes sold and homes in action are scattered site homes. We have a couple in Sussex we're working on, a number in Kent County, and some in Newcastle. Most of that activity is through the Neighborhood Stabilization Program, the federal money that's come down in the last couple of years. The Community Land Trust model is a proven successful model in the United States. There are over 220 community land trusts around the country. Some are in urban areas, some are in rural areas. Some work to in areas that are recovering in cities where The housing stock is converted from homeowner to rental, and this is a good way to help go back to homeownership. It's all about homeownership. The land trust model is proving to be very successful in terms of helping people not only become homeowners, but to remain homeowners. We just completed our survey for 2009 of community land trust owners in the United States. The foreclosure rate for community land trust owners in the U.S. is 8 times less than the national average of all homeowners. So there's definitely some good things going on here. That's pretty remarkable considering all the factors that are working against us in our country with the housing crisis. The ground lease is based on a national model ground lease that's been proven for 35 years around the country. So we're not really creating something new here. We have modified it and run it through Delaware attorneys to make sure it works for Delaware. But we're really basing this whole land trust, which happens to be the first statewide land trust in the country, on the best examples of how this has worked around the country. The homes will be stick-built, on-site, Sussex County builders. We don't have them signed on the dotted line. We don't have all the details of the housing designs yet. We'll, as soon as we get approval, hopefully, to move forward, we'll spend that money and put all of that detail into play. It's going to be 100% occupied, owner-occupied. These will never be rental homes. The ground lease says it's going to be owner-occupied. One person gets ready to sell, it's going to be sold to another income-qualified family. The homes for sale, assuming we stay on schedule, we estimate will sell between $115,000 and $150,000. So this will serve families, family incomes, between $30,000 and $50,000, roughly. Now, depending on the mortgage they get and so forth, there might be a little more variation. But generally speaking, that's the target income of families that we want to help. There are a number of financial supporters that have helped us get this far. Sussex County, Jim mentioned the startup money that helped us get going. Citigroup, Deutsche Bank, a couple of national groups, have been a number of groups that have helped us with the upfront money for the pre-development. And there are others that are pledging to support us further. The whole project is roughly an $11 million project, and about $8.5 million will come from sales proceeds. So there's about $2.5 million that we're raising over time. Federal Home Loan Bank of Pittsburgh, which serves our area, is very interested in the project. There are a number of groups that know about us, but it's too early to apply. You don't apply until you're ready to use the funds. As Jim mentioned, there'll be a homeowners association. Do the normal things homeowners associations do. All the buyers of the homes will be members of the Diamond State Community Land Trust. This is a membership-controlled organization, so once there are enough homeowners to come on the board, a third of the board will be homeowners themselves. Any changes in the ground lease and so forth are approved by the membership. So right now, there are not a lot of owner members in that, but as we get more members, it'll be more controlled by the membership. And the last comment I had is that I think it's a very creative project. The cluster design saves open space, which is an important thing for us. It's quality homes, tightly built. We're also looking at photovoltaic, solar, and some other things that will make it even more affordable to operate. We're not saying tonight that we have a deal on that. So we appreciate your consideration, and turn it back to Jim.
Dan, let me just ask you one question, just so it's clear for the record. The land trust itself stays involved in the operation of the development, is that correct?
Yes, that's right. That's right. I forgot to mention that. Land trust will, since we'll own the land under each parcel, and we'll own the common land, we'll always be involved in the homeowner association and with each owner. There's a permanent relationship between each owner and each and the land trust all the way, whether it's a whole community like this or a scattered site home. That's one of the reasons the foreclosure rate is so low, because the land trust is there to help folks if they start to get in trouble.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Gentlemen, in the exhibit book in tab 5, there are letters in support from several housing advocate groups. There's a letter from Joe Meyer of NCAL, a letter from Gina Miserandino from Sussex Housing Group, and from Kimberly Brockenbrow from Delaware State Housing Authority. As you know, with a subdivision, the commission can impose conditions on it. I will submit to Mr. Lank a list of proposed conditions for your consideration. And in closing, our application conforms to the requirements of the subdivision ordinance. It conforms to the requirements of the zoning ordinance. It's in accordance with the uses permitted by the comp plan and also in accordance with the goals advocated by the housing element of the comp plan. Our location is in an area where, by my count, at least 17 other single-family residential lots exist immediately across the street and on our side of the street. Many of those lots have existing homes on it, so the use that we're proposing already exists in that area, and our request is basically for a similar use to what is already there. The county land use laws authorize our proposed request, and our proposal conforms to the applicable requirements of those laws. We respectfully request your approval, and we will try to answer any questions you may have. The only other thing, I did want to submit a copy of the housing element of the land use plan that I referred to in my presentation.
All right, sir. We appreciate your presentation. We'll see if anyone on the commission has any questions for you. We'll start with Mr. Ross.
Mr. Fuqua, on tab 2 under L, in the exhibit book, there's a listing that says that this is a request for a change of zoning of AR1 to conditional use, and that's really not what this application is. I take it that this is a typographical error in the exhibit book, so I just wanted to make sure that that's noted for the record.
Yes, it's a subdivision application.
Was the public advertising correct, Mr. Lank?
Yes, it was. Okay. Related to the subdivision of the cluster.
Thank you. Okay.
The project mentions moderately priced housing numerous times. This is not part of the Sussex County moderately priced housing program. It's a kind of a standalone. Can you clarify that?
The MPHU program is really a program encouraging bonus density. It basically was designed to provide additional density above and beyond what an applicant could normally require or acquire, provided that the additional density would comply with the parameters of that MPHU ordinance. This is actually a standalone application for 50 single-family lots, which could be a standard subdivision, could be sold for market value and whatever as a private development. Same thing, same process, same thing. It's just that my client is the Community Land Trust, and their goal is to accomplish affordable housing. So that's what ties it in.
Certainly unique in my limited experience on the commission, that's for certain. The HUD certified home buyer program, I guess just for the edification of those and myself too, can you go into a little
I'll
bit
I'll probably
more
refer to Van for that. I think you might be more familiar with that than I am.
HUD-certified training is something that's generally required with almost any form of federal money, no matter where it comes from or what it's called. So you want to be sure that the families have basic homebuyer training. In addition to that, since these are shared equity deals, these are community land trust deals, we'll provide the additional training on top of that so the family understands what they're getting and what they're not, because these are not fee simple. This is a shared equity deal. It's a different deal. It's not for everybody, but it is good for many people. So NCAL in Dover and Georgetown is our HUD-certified training agency. We're not reinventing that. We're working with the groups that are already in place.
And this is not the first time you used this type of a program in Delaware. Have you other examples of where it's been used?
Of HUD-certified training? It's used with NSP. It's used with home, any project that your group supports with home or CDBG or any other entity requires that same. It's sort of an 8-hour minimum. It's a HUD specified thing, and the agencies and the counselors get a certification to show that they know what they're doing. It's all documented.
Thank you. There's mention of a community garden in the application, and the use of that garden, perhaps excess commodity grown to be sold. I guess, you know, you wonder what happens if the community decides they don't like gardening, or what happens if they like gardening so much now they have a lot of produce. Are they going to sell it on roadside stand? Or are they going to bring it to the Laura auction block? Or what's going to happen?
Yeah, the area back here was going to be designated as community garden, which, of course, as you know, is really just a farm, an area of a where you can plant something.
And my garden is an area of weeds.
And, of course, a lot of the commission as well as people here, I mean, that's farming. But within a community, there is a trend in some communities where people want to grow, you know, their own vegetables, tomatoes, you know, whatever. And it certainly would be on a non-commercial basis. I'm sure it would be all be used within the development or by the people. It's certainly not intended to have any commercial aspect to it.
The HOA, the relationship between the HOA, Mr. Van Temple, you kind of touched on this a little bit, but in the application, it states that Diamond State Community Land Trust will be actively involved in maintaining the economic viability of the project, not only during construction, but for as long as the community exists. That's a quote. Can you explain the viability of Diamond State Community Land Trust and how that ties into the HOA in maintaining the amenities and the facility?
I'd be glad to. There are a couple of different relationships. One is each homeowner has a 99-year ground lease with the land trust, and that would be true even if this wasn't in a neighborhood. It would be true if it's all by itself. And in our ground lease, there are certain provisions of how to what requirements are there for the homeowner to maintain their property. So there's incentives built in there over and above the normal incentives that everyone should have by owning their own home. The homeowner association is necessary because it's a new, it's its own neighborhood. It's going to have its own community things to maintain. So the details of exactly how the land trust will work with the homeowner association haven't been worked out, but there'll be obviously it'll be a relationship. It's kind of a triangle relationship: the homeowner with the land trust, and then the land trust with the with the individual homeowner with the land trust with the land lease, the ground lease, and then the relationship between Diamond State and the homeowner association. It's in our remember these are permanently affordable homes. Every time the home is sold and resold, there's a new 99-year lease. And the land trust, which is a statewide nonprofit, is in the deal forever. In fact, our business plan is set up from the beginning. We said if we can't get to a sustainable level and maintain it and get to some scale and not have to worry about expanding again, there's really no point in doing this because it's not a casual undertaking. There are community development corporations that have come and gone and done some good, but when you're going to hold 99-year leases that each time someone buys the house again, a new one starts. Each time it's inherited, a new one starts. Then you have to plan on being there forever. So that's part of the reason for the design of the statewide land trust in the beginning. Many land trusts are set up for part of one city or a small service area, and that makes you – it's good for that neighborhood. But it makes you, it limits your possibilities in terms of the kind of scale you need to be sustainable. In fact, that's already come to bear fruit because if it weren't for the statewide nature of the service area, we would never have been able to take advantage of the neighborhood stabilization program that came about as an unfortunate result of the foreclosure crisis. So,
and that would include the perpetual care of the cemetery that was mentioned?
Yes, right.
And Are there any kind of restrictions on abandoned cars, boats that are, people feel they don't
all
need
that,
anymore, that the CLT takes care of?
All that's in the ground lease.
Very good. Excellent. The houses that are existing on the road frontage, there's some pretty nice homes being built right on the front of that. Lots 1 through 7, I think. There's maybe 4 homes either under construction or completed. What do you feel the value of those homes are in relationship to the $115,000 to $150,000 in the subdivision?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with those.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's enough. That's enough. I know it's been a long night, and I know it's trying your patience, but these gentlemen have the floor, and it's going to be your turn very soon. All right, sir, go ahead.
What I was saying was I'm not familiar with whether those lots are part of a subdivision or not, as we would understand a subdivision development to be. They're basically lots created with road frontage, and as you know, so many lots can be created with road frontage. I'm not familiar with the private restrictions that would be on those lots in terms of square footage or prices or things of that nature, and I'm referring to all those lots in that area, and there are some nice homes there. However, if somebody buys a lot, they can build a house on it as they deem appropriate, unless there's a restriction that prohibits it. The houses that we certainly envision here are going to be, number one, we're within a subdivision, set back and buffered, but these are certainly intended to be attractive homes. And Van, you wanted to add?
Yeah, I think the concern comes, and this has been expressed in other places in the country where community land trust neighborhoods have been built. The concern is, I think, the effect on property values in the surrounding areas. Remember, land trusts are shared equity deals. When each home is sold at closing, all of this stuff is filed with the county. A separate parcel number is created for the land, except from the house. It's not a fee simple house. It's never used as a comparable for any fee simple sale, regardless of how close it might be located to any other place. It can only be used as a comparable for another community land trust home. The appraisal is done on a fee simple basis, and then the leasehold value of the land is calculated. That's something the appraiser does. That's part of the normal appraisal training process. It's not something a lot of appraisers, residential appraisals, have done, but it's part of the normal process, and that's how the mortgage provider begins their mortgage calculation and so forth. So while it certainly is a concern that many people expressed at the beginning, the experience across the country shows that it does not lower the property values of the surrounding properties.
Well, if you don't mind if I press the point just a bit, under 99C12, one of the items that must be considered is the effect on area property values. And in your exhibit book, you state the homes will be of similar architecture and value. And so the question is the value of $115,000 to $150,000 similar to the homes that are already fronting the subdivisions in lot 1 through 4?
You got to remember now, the sale price is for the value of the improvements. The value of the land is excluded. So it's not an apples and apples comparison in that regard.
It kind of creates its own, I don't want to say problem, because the problem is also the good thing, and that is by doing the ground lease, you're able to create a less expensive improvement, a less expensive home, because the person isn't buying the ground. This isn't a unique concept. This was, Carl Freeman came up with this at Sea Colony, 35, 40 years ago. He was able to sell condominium units cheaper than the other guy because they did 99-year ground leases.
Certainly. Hopefully one last question, because the night goes on, even though we have been here past 1 in the morning. I think you've been with us.
Oh, thank you.
There was a mention for the Sussex County Technical Advisory Committee, about access to the stormwater management pond on Saddlebag Way. And this preliminary site plan, which obviously is very preliminary, but It still doesn't show any ingress or egress to that stormwater pond for maintenance or whatever. Can Mr. Couples maybe or someone want to address that?
I'm Bruce Horn, registered professional engineer here in Delaware and engineer of record for the project. This is preliminary. We had preliminary meetings with the Conservation District, and we have not worked out the final shape or the volume of the ponds. But when we're finished, there will be access, maintenance access, and also areas for a set aside for the excavation and dewatering of the siltation.
Perfect. That's all my questions, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Ross, and Mr. Fuqua et al. For answering most of my questions. The plus comments, seem to be centered around what was the other application, which was for a GRRPC. Did you feel there was a need to not go to plus again with this application? Is it basically the same?
I didn't feel there was any need to go back. I think the comments would have been generally the same. I mean, my experience has been once you're in a level four area, these are the comments you get. Would Mr. Couples like to add to something?
I contacted the circuit rider up at Plush and explained to him what we were doing, and he did not feel at that point that there was a need to return. It's the same plan.
Okay. And Mr. Couples, you mentioned about the buffers and how you said, you know, you were providing over and above what is usually required, and in some cases we're going to actually double or triple those buffer widths. Do you have a plan, or would there be something, some carcinite markers that would help maintain those buffers if the development is approved and built so homeowner wouldn't encroach back into their obligation of a buffer?
Not dissimilar to what we've done with wetlands, the buffers to the statutory buffers that are shown on the plan will be monumented so that people don't, so that what generally happens is the play sets migrate, the sheds migrate, they all find themselves into the buffer areas. Mm-hmm. And that will be done. We will provide carcinite markers not only at the buffer areas but also in the wetlands so people stay out of them.
Right. Thank you. And a question for Mr. Van Temple. I'll have to come up and speak into the mic. Just wanted to get a clarification. This is the intent is to be affordable housing. It is not a subsidized housing, or is it?
No, it's not subsidized. It's affordable.
Because I did hear you say something about some federal funds, and I'm guessing, is that for the mortgage, through the mortgage?
There are some federal funds involved in the overall project at the beginning. And then the mortgages take out the largest share of the project cost. And then beyond that, there's no running costs, there's no Section 8, there's no supports for the homeowners. They're homeowners, they own the home, they pay the taxes. And the difference is they also pay $40 a month for the ground lease. Mm-hmm. They're a member of the Statewide Land Trust, and they're a member of the Homeowner Association.
And by your admission, you're... concept, although Mr. Fuqua just indicated it's not unique to Sussex County, it has been replicated by Mr. Freeman and others, but to a lot of the people, it isn't fee simple ownership, so it is somewhat different. So I'm guessing when community land trusts go before public hearings and all, you're not surprised to see this much interest by the public.
Oh, not at all. It's not the normal, not the way that most people think about home ownership. The normal way is you own the land and the home, or at least you and your mortgage company own the land and the home, and that's sort of a stuck in people's minds. Sometimes even when we talk to the bankers, whose commercial partners on the other side of the hall do lease land under shopping centers and everything all the time, it's still a new concept for them to get their heads around.
Do you find that in the communities, once you get an approval and you build, do you find then that perhaps neighbors that have an interest or perhaps even opposition or questions to your communities, do you find that after you're
inside that neighborhood? Do you find that those questions go away? Do you find yourself being a good neighbor?
I'd have to go on what the national experience is, because we're relatively new in Delaware. The experience nationally is that land trusts are well accepted. Lots of times people who are in the neighborhood who don't own land trust homes become a part of a neighborhood association, or it's really more than just the house. It's about the community and control. There are even low-income neighborhoods that want community land trusts, low-income neighborhood, really low-income urban neighborhoods, that's not what this is, where they've gone through many cycles of investor-owned, absentee investor-owned people, and they see what that does to a community. And what they like most about this is that those homes that are made into the land trust are not only affordable, but they'll never be owner, they'll never be leased, they'll never be rental properties again. So that's another aspect of it.
One last question, if you'll allow me to repeat a question, because I want to hear you answer Mr. Ross's question again about the property values, because I thought I heard you say that there's somewhat of a different set of criteria or a judging used by the by an appraiser.
Right.
In determining a property value, and I thought Mr. Ross's question was forward, you know, a dollar's a dollar to me.
I got a little bit into the mortgage calculation business, which is really not what I needed to focus on. But what at sale, this is recorded, at a sale of a fee simple house, the price is recorded. That's the most true value of what a property is worth, not what someone would appraise it for, but what someone would buy it for. Under this model, when it's filed, it's clearly stated that the house is what's owned by the family, that the land is owned by the land trust. So it's not a comparable. It's filed as two different. I'm assuming Sussex County will split the parcel into two parcel numbers. That's what Kent and Newcastle have done. That's what most groups do around the country. So it's split ownership. And so that means if an appraiser in the future looks at one of these homes and says, oh, well, is this a comparable for some new development someone wants to do, or a resale or something, they will see that it's recorded as a shared equity deal, that the recorded sale price is for the improvements, not the land. And so it's not a comparable.
Okay.
In that sense.
Thank you.
That's all.
Mr. Burton.
I hate to keep going back over the same question, but I still have to ask. You stated that they were income qualified homeowners. What does that mean?
We're hoping to serve families that are at 80% of the area median income for Sussex County. Each year around March, February or March, HUD puts out a new set of averages for each county, for each metropolitan area. So for Sussex County 2010, for a family of four, I believe the median income is around $55,000, $56,000. Someone have the exact? Gina, someone have the exact? 55. Okay. Thank you. The new figures just came out a couple weeks ago. Sussex County, family of four, the median income is only the 80%. This doesn't have the median the actual median income. The numbers for 80% are 46,700 for a family of four. It's based on family size. So if you have more in your family,
you use the federal program to set the the qualifier for the homeowner?
You use everyone who does income, any kind of income-restricted programs, generally speaking, uses the federal guidelines because they're the ones that do the research. They're the ones that, you know, put the statistics.
But is income-restricted?
Yes.
The whole community is?
Yes.
Income-restricted. Okay.
Thank you.
What stops a guy from getting qualified and then renting it?
The ground lease prohibits renting. It has to be your primary residence.
You have to stay on.
Yes.
On site. Is there a manager of the association? Is there somebody that's going to monitor that?
Well, the land trust will be integrally involved. The homeowner association may have a part-time staff person. That's yet to be determined. It's a pretty big pretty big.
But it's not there on site. Is that correct?
We don't have that worked out.
Okay. Do you have it in any other places?
Well, this is our only large-scale project that we've gotten this far with so far. The others are scattered site homes or smaller developments.
Okay. What do you anticipate the square foot of these homes to be?
We're designing between 1350 and 1900, about four different models. So there'll be some variation, 3 and 4 bedroom. We want to have some for some larger families and some for a typical family. Nothing smaller than a 3 bedroom, though.
Okay. And a couple last questions. You mentioned that there was park access, and I couldn't find it in the book. There was that the state park had said that we were allowing that. Is that through the road, or is that actually across?
I think what the state said that they would prefer to see a designated access rather than have, you know, just random entrance and exit from the park. So as part of the final site plan design, there would be coordinated with DENREC access into the park. It's not shown on that.
Are you anticipating that it's going to be somewhere north of that stream or somewhere down the where you get on a walking path and enter the park?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. That hasn't been designed. Obviously, it wouldn't cross the stream, so it would have to be one place or the other.
And you have to work that out with the state park.
Right, and it would be up to the state. But they had suggested it in the first place.
I was at the Plus hearing, and the woman who was representing them sounded to me like she wanted more than one trail, and we just said we would work with her on where they thought were appropriate.
Okay. And as far as the traffic impact study, you did not do a traffic impact study. You used other data for the...
No, none was required.
No, that's not right. We participated in the area-wide.
DLDOT gave us the option to either do our own or to participate in the area-wide traffic study that they were funding, and we elected to do that. We did have our own traffic engineer look at level of services, which I've previously talked to about the intersection, but there was no requirement. We have a letter of no objection from DLDOT that's in the book that has no problem with the access point.
Okay. Thank you. No further questions.
Okay. Mr. Lang?
A hypothetical question. If the project were to be approved and you acquired access to a sewage treatment facility off-site, would the project remain at 50 lots or would you be coming back and applying for more?
Well, again, hypothetically. I mean, this application is for 50 lots, and that's what we're applied for. In fact, once this is done, the open space is open space, and I don't think it could be changed. There's certainly not going to be any attempt to reserve that. I think this is being designed and marketed it for what you see, and I think that's what it would be.
That's all I have.
Mr. Abbott?
The questions.
Council?
No, thanks.
Did we answer that question about the ground lease comparison? Because I was getting confused myself.
I think it's
satisfied with that.
It's been answered about as good as it can be answered, I think. We've had two shots at it. It's 10 o'clock. Sir, I need to speak with you for a second. I got a question or two for you, if you would. Come up to the microphone. We'd like for you to share with us what the site selection criteria was. How did we select this site?
We were looking for a parcel that we could do a small neighborhood. We looked for about 2 years, 2005, 2006, part of 2007, all over Sussex County. The target was Sussex County. Mm-hmm. We looked near towns and cities. We looked at I think about 23 or 24 different parcels. We looked at more than that, but we looked at that many and did some sketches and some what-ifs and that sort of thing without going to the trouble of getting a soil analysis and all that. And settled on this one because it met our overall requirements. Many of the properties that were for sale were much, much larger, and we did not want to build a larger project.
Okay. Can you be a little more specific as to what some of that criteria is? I mean, I'll tell you what my concern is. My concern is that with the constituent group that you are serving, quite often there are transportation issues, and the proximity to services, the proximity to schools and shopping, and things of this nature, and plus the availability of city services, city water and sewer, sometimes are perhaps more important to those type constituent groups than they are might be with some other folks. Not the least of which is the price of gasoline. The thing that just struck me about this site is that it's sort of in the middle of nowhere. It isn't close to anything. Hey, that's enough, people. That it isn't close. Now I'm not making a judgment about your site at all. I mean, that's what we're here to try to do, is decide if this is the right place for this. But I'm allowing for the fact that, number one, I don't do what you do, and you may have criteria that I'm not aware of, but I'm just saying from my own common sense would seem to indicate that if you really want to serve folks that are in that circumstance, that you might want to be a little closer to the grocery store. But tell me, but I'm happy to listen to what you...
Sure. I think that's partially true. The nature of the jobs, however, in Sussex County is that they're scattered. There aren't large, generally speaking, aren't large concentrations of jobs. The rural and agricultural and building jobs and so forth are scattered all over the place. So this will serve families that are going to drive to work no matter where they live. I mean, rarely would they be able to live right near their work. They even work in different places. Construction, we did some surveys about who needed housing and the kinds of jobs that they have.
Yeah, I don't think the DART bus is going to go out there to pick anybody up.
No, we're not counting on the DART bus to come out there.
I mean, that was my only concern, was it just seemed kind of remote for the group that you're speaking of. But that's why I wanted to give you an opportunity to tell us what led you to this.
Well, the price of land is a big factor.
Okay.
We started out looking around Georgetown and some of the other town centers.
When did you buy this land? When did you acquire the land?
2007.
Okay.
Actually, we have put money down, and the owner is holding the land for us until we get planning and zoning.
Depending on the outcome of what's happening here, I imagine.
Right. Yeah, we don't need to own any land that we can't develop.
I certainly go along with you there.
Mr. Chairman, that is, yes, I mean, it's part of, there's a circular thing to this whole thing, and that is that when you're trying to accomplish affordable housing, I mean, from any project I was ever involved in, the price point of the house was ultimately going to get tied back into what the land cost. And we know all the craziness we went through in Sussex County with land costs. So the price of that house is related to land costs. So the land costs, you needed to be affordable to ever get to the concept of affordable housing, which you're trying to accomplish. And again, there is a circle to this thing, because yes, if you said, okay, lower and middle income qualifying people, if you were closer to Seaford or Laurel or Del Mar or someplace, then you'd have access to public services and you'd be closer to the store and closer to the school. But that's the very point of these programs, that some of those folks don't want to live there. They want the same opportunities that other people have, and they want to be able to stay in a nice community and a nice development with the amenities that other people have. And that's the purpose of the program, to create this affordable housing. Now, these are working people. These are people that do have cars, and it's not high income, but it's people who can take care of themselves, basically, is what it comes down to.
All right, then. Thank you. Appreciate it. Gentlemen, thanks for your presentation, and we'll see if there's anyone here with an interest in your application. And we'll start by asking if there is anyone here who would like to speak in favor of subdivision 2010-3 Diamond Estate Community Land Trust. Yes, ma'am. Step right up.
Good Hi, I'm Amy Walls. I'm from Seaford, and I'm a board member of the Land Trust. I also serve on the board of Habitat for Humanity here in Sussex County. And I think it's important to note that we get 50 calls a month at Habitat for people looking for housing. So there's a definite need for affordable housing in our community. And Habitat serves 60% and below. So these are people, so we have an actual bigger range of people that we can choose from for these houses. And I think if you want to look at an example of houses that are for moderately income people, I think you just have to look at Concord Village. You know, they mow their grass and they take care of their property and they're forming an HOA and they don't need a staff person to oversee them to do that. You know, they have pride in their homes. They have pride in the opportunity to be able to build their own homes, to choose the type of siding and shutters and carpet that they want, just like anybody else who has a bigger means to do new construction. And I agree with, I'm sure, some of the comments that, you know, there's plenty of housing available, foreclosed properties that people can choose from. But people of moderate income deserve the same chance to build in their home, just like the rest of us that have a greater means. And then the other one is actually Manchester Manor, which is in Laurel. It is developed by Milford Housing Development Corporation. They have a minimum of 5 lots. I think they're up to 8 now. And they're all serving 80% and below as well. And those homes are placed right next to traditional homes with people who are buying them at market rate. And they look the same. They look just as nice. They're taking care of their properties just as well. And then from a business perspective, I work at a bank on the management team. And we have 6 tellers. And none of them own homes. And they're in their 20s up through their 50s. And it's because they don't have homes that are available to them. It's not that they're not interested. It's not that their credit scores are poor. It's that, you know, they want the opportunity to build a house. And they want options. And they want them all over the county. And they all have cars. They all can get back and forth to work. They can get to the services that they need. But they still qualify. And, you know, 5 years ago when I first graduated from college, I would have qualified based on the income that I was making with a bachelor's degree. So there's nothing that's precluding these people from improving their lives and having better income, and there's nothing that's going to preclude them from taking care of the property. I'm a strong supporter of the Land Trust, obviously, as being a board member, but I actually reached out to them 5 years ago with some of our affordable housing needs in Seaford when I was working there, because I knew that by making a perpetually affordable home and by having that constant contact with the individuals, it's going to make stronger home ownership. The idea that they have to do the HUD-approved counseling plus all the additional counseling so that they understand the constant contact, I think it's really it's an equation for success for these people. And I'm just very supportive, and thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Anyone else like to speak in favor? Yes, ma'am.
I almost said good morning. It's past my bedtime. first of all, I'd like to share the greetings of Sandy Spence, who's a Lewis resident and also a member of the Delaware Housing Coalition Board of Directors. She has a very early morning plane to catch, so she wasn't able to stay, but she wanted me to share her full support for this application. My name is Gina Misserandino. I'm staff with Delaware Housing Coalition. We enjoy excellent cooperative, collaborative relationship with the Sussex County Community Development and Housing Department. We have a committee called the Sussex Housing Group, which engenders cooperation and collaboration across Sussex County, and we've also been fortunate to receive financial support from Sussex County in order to do that, so I want to mention that. We believe that this development is in complete agreement with Sussex County's comprehensive plan's housing element goal to facilitate decent, safe, sanitary housing for low and moderate income people. Mr. Fuqua mentioned that, but I thought that was important to reiterate. The comprehensive plan also notes the contribution of Sussex County to the Diamond State Community Land Trust and describes the advantages of the land trust model. Last month, the Delaware Housing Coalition released our 2010 edition of Who Can Afford to Live in Delaware. It's a report on affordable housing needs and solutions throughout Delaware. And in the fourth quarter of 2009, the median home price in Sussex County was $237,000. This is a 59% increase since the year 2000. An affordable price for a low to moderate income person is $156,954. This leaves a gap between what is affordable to a moderate income family and the median home price of $80,046. So the Community Land Trust is definitely filling a need, as others have mentioned. There is a crying need here in Sussex County for affordable home ownership opportunities. I want to keep this short. I just want to say that Delaware Housing Coalition heartily endorses this effort and foresees its implementation as a future crown jewel in Sussex County's housing options. And we urge you to support it. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, anyone else in favor? Okay, before we hear from the opposition, we have been sitting here for 4 hours and 15 minutes. I know that some of the opposition speakers need some time to set up a PowerPoint presentation. Attorneys and spokespeople go first. The PowerPoint presentation is being presented by an attorney. He will go first. We are going to recess for 5 minutes to allow you to set up your PowerPoint and to allow everybody else to get up and stretch.